Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Here's a nice feed up top. Giannis goes up and climbs the ladder and sends it down with a dunk.
Bucks talk starts now.
128-100, the Toronto Raptors snap the four-game losing streak to the Bucks, and in the process win their third straight game after dropping four in a row before this little mini run of success.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia.
All right, let's get into it. Not a whole lot of positives in this one tonight. And I think this was the concern last night, why we said, I'm not going to call it a must win, but you really need to hang on and win this Pacers game. Certainly because of the people or the players on the court that you were going up against in Indiana and lack thereof, but knowing what waited for you tonight. Night two of a back-to-back where you're going to arrive in Toronto sometime around 2 in the morning. I believe it was 2:30 that the Bucks got there and got to the hotel. But you're going up against another young team, an athletic team, an aggressive team, and a team that likes to play a hounding, pressure-style defense, get in transition, and score off of turnovers, which typically get amplified when you're tired. And I think that's a product of what we saw tonight. I don't think it's all of it, to be fair. I know Doc Rivers, after the game, had said, look, we just didn't have it tonight. That was certainly rather evident. You know, you could see a lot of the missed shots that the Bucks had. Open looks, missing short, which is typically indicative of tired legs. But this wasn't just, well, the Bucks were tired. They got in Toronto at 2:30 in the morning. That's a disservice to the Raptors, and it ignores some of the things we talked about last night after the Kings game and need to continue to keep an eye on and monitor here these next couple of games. You get 2 days off. That's the good news. And I think that's why Giannis played tonight. We saw that moment last night where he was clutching. His knee is probably a bit strong. But he was on the injury report the previous three games with knee soreness. And we saw that game. We saw that moment in the game where Giannis goes down and is kind of grabbing at the knee. I didn't think we'd see him play tonight. I think we saw him because you get 2 days off before that Bulls game. But there's a couple of things that have started to become very obvious with this team, and I don't know that we can call them trends yet because it's three games that we're talking about. I mean, a sample size in total of eight games. These last three games, the Bucks have not played well. A very, very disappointing loss to the Sacramento Kings at home on Saturday. You had to gut out that win against the Pacers in a game that you frankly should have won a little more comfortably last night. And now this one, a combination of many things, tired legs, fatigue, a Raptors team that was more aggressive and just forced you into actions you couldn't execute, turnovers scored off of those. But there's a couple of things that have stood out, especially these past three games, but for the duration of this eight-game season so far for the Bucks. These are things that need to be corrected for this team to continue to take a step forward. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Those three things, we'll go through them one by one. What's the most startling? What's the area you think would be easiest for the Bucks to improve? We'll also preview the matchup with the Chicago Bulls. But again, not a whole lot of positives from this one. So I think we need to look at what we've seen so far in these past couple of games that needs to be corrected for this team. We'll dig into each of those coming up after this on Bucks Talk. All right, a disappointing night in Toronto for the Bucks, dominated by the Raptors essentially from start to finish. 128-100 final tonight. A couple of categories in key areas to keep an eye on in the stat sheet tonight, which lead us to the trends that we've seen from this Bucks team. Raptors had 10 offensive rebounds. Turn those into 15 second chance points. They were plus six on you in those points scored. They forced 12 live ball turnovers from the Bucks, 15 turnovers total, and scored 21 points off of those. Bucks, meanwhile, just forced 10. And scored 8 points off of them. So you're plus six in second chance points. You're plus 13 in points off of turnovers. Fast break points was 27 to 11 Raptors. A lot of that is tied into the turnovers and points off of turnovers. So all of these hustle categories, you added up, and the Raptors dominated you. You had open looks. They just didn't fall. You hit your first three shots of the game, first four shots, first three threes, and went an ice-cold 8 of 35 the rest of the way. And for all intents and purposes, the damage was done by A.J. Green and Gary Trent Jr. You take those guys out of the mix, you were 6 of 30 on threes, everyone else. But let's get back to that offensive rebounding number. Last year, the Bucks were the third best defensive rebounding team in the league. And look, it's important to look at the rebounding rate and not your, you know, average number of rebounds secured every game. That is important. You have to close the possession. But in theory, if your opponent is missing more shots than you are, and as we've seen up until tonight, this Bucks offense has been very efficient. It was so last year as well. If your opponent's going to miss more shots, you should bring down more rebounds than them. So what we're really interested in is rebounding opportunities, and that's what rebounding rate tells you. As I mentioned, last year the Bucks had the third best defensive rebounding rate in the league. This year, that defensive rebounding rate for the Bucks, and this is not including tonight's performance, but coming into play tonight, it was 67.4%. That is 21st in the league. I'm going to guess they'll drop to 23rd, somewhere around there, and that rebounding rate might drop to 66%. What that rate is when the opponent shoots the ball, 67.4, two-thirds of the time, when the opponent shoots, you're getting the rebound. It's not good. You want that number to be in the high 70s. I believe the Bucks were 75 last year when they finished third. They have traditionally been one of the top five defensive rebounding teams. They were 72.5% last year. They've traditionally been in the top five in that category, really since Mike Budenholzer arrived in Milwaukee, and Brooke Lopez, I suppose I should say, arrived in Milwaukee. They've been good at it. They've been a good rebounding team, too, despite the fact that they're not pulling down offensive rebounds. But this year, it appears to have caught up to them. And it's only eight games. There's certainly time to get this moving in the right direction. But this is a problem. And as much as we talked about the improvement of your defense, is that you have, you know, last year we talked about limit the liabilities that you have on the floor. At any given moment, you go back 2 years ago, you knew what you were up against. You get to the late moments of a game, you get to crunch time, the opponent can look at your backcourt and say, all right, we can go at Malik Beasley. We can go at Damian Lillard. We can find some of these. We can put Brooke Lopez in a pick and roll, play him off the floor, because the strength of your perimeter defense is no longer there. So it exposes him as well. You limited those liabilities a season ago. You sprinkled in more team defenders that could take on those tasks, and you were better defensively. Hard not to be from where they were 2 years ago. But this year, the thought was, okay, not only did we continue to limit the defensive liabilities, we've removed them. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that this starting unit or most of their bench guys are guys that you could look at and say, hey, these are all NBA caliber players, but I wouldn't look at them and say they're bad defenders. I know there's a call out there that maybe A.J. Green needs to be examined as such, and Bobby Portis. I mean, we'll get to Bobby Portis in a minute. A.J. Green's not a bad defender. He's not the best on your team. He's not a bad defender. The defensive issues and the rebounding issues are intertwined. And it may boil down to sample size. You know, we go back to the playoffs last year, the final eight games of the regular season, too, when you played, you had that win streak in the final stretch of the regular season when you're playing without Damian Lillard. And we heard John Horst in the offseason talk about sample size, and we believe in sample size being important. We know we don't have it, you know, a large sample size for this group, Gary Trent Jr., A.J. Green, Giannis, etc. But we believed in what we saw in big moments, in the final eight regular season games, and then when those guys were on the floor in the playoffs against the Indiana Pacers. And offensively, absolutely. You know, extremely limited, but they were elite. Even game one against the Wizards, not a good defense, right? But in those 9 minutes that you had the starters on the floor, you had an elite offense. I think it was 1.7 points per possession. So in other words, you're basically scoring a two-point field goal every single time you have the ball. If you get 100 possessions in a game and you're posting 170 points, I'd say that's pretty good. That's what they were on pace for with Kevin Porter Jr. on the floor. I think Kevin Porter Jr. gives you a little more versatility defensively as well. He is a little bit more of a gambler. So is Gary Trent Jr. That can be bad. It can also lead to turnovers and fast breaks, which have suddenly dissipated from this team for the past three games. But the rebounding component is especially jarring because I know I raised the question over the summer, early in the season. It is early in the season, early as the season was starting on some of our first shows. This was something I brought up. I brought it up on Locked On Bucks several times over the summer as well. I want to see how this team is at defensive rebounding because as we just ran through, this was a very good defensive rebounding team for 7 or 8 years. And a huge piece of that was Brook Lopez. You know, you can't just look at the counting numbers and say, well, he averages four rebounds a game. He's not good. It's like the percentage. It's the rebounding opportunities that he creates when he's on the floor. Boxing out, tapping the ball as much as a lot of people hated to see it, tapping it out to Giannis. The Bucks were a better rebounding team on both sides with Brook Lopez on the floor than they were off the floor. Now, if you interacted with anyone from Indiana and any upset Pacers fans, one of the many things they would tell you about Miles Turner is, yeah, well, good luck. He's not a good rebounder. And they would point to the same thing of, I mean, he gets five rebounds a game or something along those lines. So I looked it up. Miles Turner, when he was on the floor last season, the Pacers were a better defensive rebounding team than they were with Miles Turner off the floor. Right now, though, this season, we just gave you the Bucks numbers for their defensive rebounding rate 2/3 of the time, basically. With Giannis and Miles Turner on the floor, that defensive rebounding rate is only 2 percentage points higher. It's still not cracking 70, which is not good. And you would assume, well, Miles Turner can play that Brook Lopez role. I don't think he's quite as good at boxing out as Brook Lopez. I think there's a little more agility to do some other things, but it's going to continue to lead to massive rebounding numbers for Giannis, which it has. Where the rebounding has become an issue, though, is, I believe, on the perimeter. And I think this is one of the things that was probably the elephant in the room that all of us chose to ignore. And our big thought was, well, how are you going to defend on the perimeter? Not so much, how are you going to rebound and keep up with that? You are playing undersized players. Gary Trent Jr. 6'4". A.J. Green is 6'4". You know, it changes things when you look at guys like Jason Tatum being down for the season. But let's look at the matchups tonight. Brandon Ingram has over a 7-foot wingspan. Got a lot more size than A.J. Green, than Gary Trent Jr. R.J. Barrett, same story. He was a 3 for most of his career. Now he's playing a 2-guard. He's a bigger 2-guard. Bucks have started to run into that a lot more. Kings, same story when you're going up against DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. You're giving up a lot of size. And in the minutes with the starters on the floor, the Bucks have surrendered so far this season 22 offensive rebounds to perimeter players on the opponent. So your two guards and your small forwards. It's not to pick at Gary Trent Jr. and A.J. Green. It's just pointing out, look, the guys that you're responsible for, we've given up 22 offensive rebounds to those guys alone on a nightly basis so far this season. That has to be fixed. You're not going to find success. And so far, you know, again, this team is in the lower half of the league in defensive efficiency. Tonight is going to plummet it even more. Two of your last three games, when you look at what the Kings put up on you and now what the Raptors did tonight and how efficiently they did it, there's a lot of holes in this defense. It has to start with the rebounding. You have to close those possessions. You know, 15 second chance points tonight for the Raptors off of those offensive rebounds, and that's not even a season high that the Bucks have given up so far. So there's been a lot of talk of, you know, did Kevin Porter Jr. get Wally Pipped, and is he never going to return to the starting lineup because of what Ryan Rollins did, the revelation of Rollins last week in those games against the Knicks and the Warriors. Ryan Rollins has not been bad, but Ryan Rollins has tailed off since. And I think a big piece of that is he still needs to take on the toughest defensive assignments. And, you know, we've seen Cole Anthony foul out of a game. There's not much else behind him. So all of a sudden, what he's shouldering gets to be a lot more. 16 second chance points from the Kings over the weekend. Like, on average, this is what the Bucks are giving up to their opponents. Indiana Pacers had 20 second chance points. So it starts with defensive rebounding, with securing the ball, closing out the possession. And the talk of, do you make a change to the starting lineup, I think may be valid, but it's probably a different conversation than many anticipated. So we'll continue this conversation in a few other areas that have really jumped out with this team. Coming up after this on Bucks Talk. All right, here's the other thing from tonight. We went through the hustle categories and the numbers where the Raptors dominated. Spoiler alert, it was all. We mentioned fast break points, 27-11, and said, look, a big product of that is the Raptors getting in transition and the 12 live ball turnovers that they forced. Well, here's the scarier part, which again, I think speaks to the size of your defense, because there was a few moments in this game, and granted, they were very brief, but where it did seem like the Bucks are starting to maybe find something and digging in and getting a couple of stops, it was when they played big. The Raptors didn't have a good transition game. I'm not going to bore you with the advanced numbers, but they were in the middle of the pack, in the 50th percentile, with offense created off of transition in this game tonight, which, to the eye test, doesn't seem accurate. This part does. They were elite tonight in the half court, offensively. And that is when both teams have had a chance to set. The offense can get down there and say, here's the play that we want to run. Here's how we want to execute it. The defense has a chance to get set and say, okay, we're going to switch. We're going to play zone. We're ready for this. We're not scrambling and getting back in transition. In those moments, the Raptors dominated the Bucks. 90th percentile with their offensive efficiency in the half court. And that's the struggle. That's the challenge with playing smaller. Even though you got 2 7-footers in your front court, the rest of the guys on the floor are 6'4". And I've talked about it quite a bit. Ryan Rollins has a near 7-foot wingspan. I think Gary Trent Jr.'s is 6'7 or 6'8. That only matters so much. You can offset it if your offense is going to be elite. And if you're hitting shots and you're forcing that team to take the ball out of the net, you can get your offense or defense set, even though tonight that wasn't the case, and sprinkle in some other things like zone to throw them off. But that hinges on you having a good offense, which the Bucks did coming into this game tonight. Fourth best offense in the league in terms of efficiency, but we didn't see any of that tonight. So the conversation of, do you need to tweak the starting lineup? It's still too early to say one way or another. We're not going to see Kevin Porter Jr. back on the floor for, another 3 weeks at least? So it's going to take some time. It's probably safe to assume you're not going to see Kevin Porter Jr. back until probably December. When he does come back, what do you do from there? I'd be curious to see if we do see a backcourt that is Kevin Porter Jr. and Ryan Rollins, and Gary Trent Jr. is still starting with them, or A.J. Green. But you have one of those two guys coming off the bench to give even more shooting to your bench unit and to give a little more oomph on both ends of the floor. Two-way player and Kevin Porter Jr. And a little more size and length. He's another guy that's 6'4", 6'5", so it's not like you're bringing in a 6'8" guy. But I'd be curious to see if that's something that the Bucks go to. The big lineups where they found success were pretty Kyle Kuzma heavy. And I think that's probably been the biggest surprise or biggest thing that a lot of Bucks fans have had to come to grips with so far this season. And something, again, I talked about in the offseason. He was not good on the court last year. Nobody's denying that. But I think the discourse around Kyle Kuzma got a little out of hand. And I look at the moves the Bucks made in the offseason and compare that to the previous season with Kyle Kuzma specifically. I felt pretty good about the type of performance you would get from Kyle Kuzma. Through eight games, I think that's definitely been the case. Now, a lot can change over 74 games, but I think he's been a much different player and an effective player. You know, at worst, I think you would say Kyle Kuzma's been okay so far this season. It's been a rough start for Bobby Portis, though. And you look at how this team tailored their lineup. I'm not ready to make any broad assumptions off of eight games, but let's just file this one away. They revamped the roster to basically fit Kyle Kuzma's style. Not specifically for that purpose, but this roster fits how Kyle Kuzma plays. There's athleticism. There's guys that are going to get out there and run. There's better defenders. Again, you've removed guys that are basically turnstiles. And last year, why that's important, last year when Kyle Kuzma arrived, you said to him essentially, okay, Kuz, we need you to hit open threes. We need you to play defense and take on some tough assignments defensively. And we need you to push the pace. The problem was he didn't get a bulk of those looks. And when he did, that's not even Kyle Kuzma's strength, to be a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. We can cite the bubble performance all we want here. Go look at the numbers. He was better. It wasn't this elite performance that I think everybody gets wrapped up in. And like, well, bubble Kuz, if you could get that guy. It was good. It wasn't to the levels that it gets spoken of, you know, in terms of his efficiency. But he's also a rhythm player. And those shots, they fall easier when he's getting to the rim. You know, when he's made a couple of those shots and he's in a groove, that's when you see his outside shots start to fall more. He never really had that chance last year. Defensively, you're saying, Kuz, go get him. Be one of our best defenders and take on some versatile matchups, which he did. But he didn't have a whole lot of help around it. So everything that changed with this roster fits Kyle Kuzma much better. And I'm not saying it doesn't fit Bobby Portis, but I don't know that an up-and-down style is ideal for Bobby Portis. You know, I think he's more of a half-court player, and he fit well with guys like Damian Lillard, who's going to play that type of ISO ball. Look, it's also tough when good looks that Bobby has had have not fallen regularly this season. I don't know that we're having this conversation if that's the case. If Bobby's having his usual shooting performance in these first eight games, not even a talking point. But he hasn't. And Kyle Kuzma, I think, has thrived with his bench unit. Not only that, I dare say you've trusted Kyle Kuzma out there in stretches. There's been some moments offensively, right? And I think there was one in the game tonight, too, where there was an early three and you could see a little bit of frustration on Doc Rivers' face. There have certainly been some of those. Not as much as a year ago. And he just seems to fit with that second unit, with Cole Anthony, who's going to push the pace. When Ryan Rollins, for those 9 minutes, was coming off the bench, right? The rest of that group, Torian Prince, Kyle Kuzma just seems to fit with those guys. So what happens there in the front court and how that develops is also going to be interesting. But, you know, tonight the other thing was, and this kind of ties back to the rebounding numbers that we threw out there, your point of attack defense just wasn't good enough. And I think the half court numbers back it up. And that's been the story for three games now. It was so good right out of the gates, right? Granted, game one was against not really a good understatement. Washington Wizards team. But, you know, how impressive this group looked at containing dribbles against the Knicks, against the Warriors. It's all sort of evaporated here. And how much of that is one thing bleeds into another? I don't know. I think that's what we're going to figure out here over these next 4 to 6 games, because this all of a sudden is another interesting stretch that this team finds themselves in the midst of now. Starting Friday, that's going to be 6 games in 9 days. And another stretch with a lot of good teams in there. The Chicago Bulls, number one in the Eastern Conference. You get them. You get the challenge of the Houston Rockets. And we talk about teams that are going to play up and down the floor and high-octane offense and very physical, aggressive defense. Toronto is like the JV version of what Houston is going to do. So that's going to be a challenge. You have all these games starting to add up, once again, that are good tests for this team. But you got to clean up those really three key areas if you're going to do anything in those matchups. You have got to rebound better. You have to contain the dribble, and you have to protect the basketball. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line if you want to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. A tough one, to say the least, a 28-point loss at the hands of the Toronto Raptors, a team you beat 10 days ago. And a win that we thought, hey, this is a really good win. Much different story tonight in Toronto. We'll take a look at the rest of the games being played. We're not going to look at the standings, but just what's jumped out so far in the Eastern Conference. And speaking of those Chicago Bulls, we'll preview that matchup as well coming up next on Bucks Talk. All right, so the updated view is not pretty. Through 8 games, I don't know where many people stood. I think the general assumption was this defense was going to be good. I'm not saying it can't be. We're just looking at 8 out of 82 games. But I think the general feeling surrounding this team was, hey, the defense is going to be good. Maybe they could be a top 10 defense. We'll see what happens with the offense. Because we kept coming back to who's going to be the number 2 scorer on this team. It's been the inverse. And I felt like, I think the ceiling is higher with the offense. I could see a Giannis plays like the MVP and you're hitting shots and somebody, one of those guys, Kevin Porter Jr. was who I assumed it would be, and it still can be, takes a pretty big step forward. Your offense all of a sudden becomes like, hey, this offense is really efficient. Can we get that defense to just better than league average? That should be a recipe for a pretty good season. And it certainly felt like that through the first, what, five games of the season here. But since, it has not been pretty. Bucks came into the game tonight with a fourth-rated offense in the league. They struggled to get to 100 points, and they've dropped to ninth. The Raptors have moved past you now. I don't look at that Raptors team and think it's a team full of offensive firepower. Defensively, though, is the problem. You are 23rd in defensive efficiency, and your net rating is now basically flat. That's how bad the defense has gotten. For most of the first 2 weeks of the season, the Bucks were in the top 10 or nearing the top 10 in both offense and defense, and in the top 10 in net rating. Right now, you're ninth in offense, 23rd in defense, and your net rating has slipped to 14th. 23rd, by the way, is where the defense ranked when you fired your head coach. The rebounding numbers have kind of plateaued. You're in the bottom 10 in defensive rebounding. You're in the bottom 5 in rebounding rate. And somehow you're not the worst offensive rebounding team. So there's a lot to clean up here. There's one other thing we didn't touch on. Free throws, right? And look, I know it's a hot button issue with the whistle that Giannis gets. I would certainly say Giannis disrespectful is probably appropriate at this point. Has a disrespectful whistle. Some of the calls tonight, it grew to be very frustrating. I think you could see the players wearing that as well. But here's the thing. We kind of have to accept this is what comes with the territory. When it's just Giannis and the question exists of who's the second leading scorer? Who's the guy that's going to create offense? Who's the initiator? You know, Damian Lillard's gone. Chris Middleton is gone. You have to be aggressive and attack. And I think we saw that for the first five games of the season, four games of the season, perhaps. We saw a lot of aggressive offense. That's how you get rewarded. I'm not saying Giannis shouldn't have been rewarded with a lot more whistles these past couple of days, but that's how you get rewarded. Let's also not lose sight of this. We can point out the free throws that other teams are taking. I think it's gotten out of whack. They, 78, I believe, free throw attempts for the opponent in the last two games coming into tonight that the Bucks surrendered here. 29 tonight, so we're over 100 that you've given up to an opponent over three games, free throw attempts. But here's the other thing. It's not only about drawing the whistle and getting to the line. The Bucks are leaving points on the board with their free throw shooting. It wasn't bad tonight. Wasn't good. 71% free throw shooting at 15 of 21. And coming into play, the Bucks currently rank dead last in free throw shooting. 69.4%. That is just as important as the rebounding. That is not anywhere near good enough. And what you have to keep in mind is while you certainly have capable free throw shooters on your team, you lost three excellent free throw shooters in the span of a year. And that's going to change things with your free throw efficiency. Damian Lillard was basically a guaranteed automatic at the free throw line. Brooke Lopez, one of the best free throw shooting bigs in the league. Chris Middleton, you had all these guys that were very good free throw shooters. And now that's not the case. And we're starting to see that too, where you think about the number of points that are being left on the board because of missed free throws. So the long and short of it is, it's only eight games. It's a tenth of the way through the season. And what did we say at the start of the year? You can't get off to a slow start. 5-3, remember where they were a season ago? Through eight games, what? 1-7? I'd much rather be 5-3. You still made the playoffs at 1-7. Right. It's not a death sentence to get off to a slow start through your first 10 games, but it requires a lot more extra work. So the important part is don't dig a hole, right? Stop the dig at some point and just get out of that hole. And the Bucks did a good job of that last year. They've avoided it so far this year. Go back to what Giannis said. Good teams don't lose two games in a row. So far, they've been able to avoid that. You got a pretty big test Friday night when the Bulls come to town, though, for an NBA Cup game. Let's squeeze in one call here before the break. Kevin in Milwaukee, you're up on Bucks Talk.
All right. Thank you for the time. What I'd like to say is the Bucks have really followed my plan of action. I told them last year, I told you at the end of last year, they needed to get rid of Brooke Lopez. They needed to retire Damian Lillard's number one and transfer it over to Michael Parsons of the Green Bay Packers. And that's what they did. They got rid of two people on the team who weren't good team players. And that was a good thing. The loss of Chris Middleton, they still don't have what they had in 2022 and 2023. When he was healthy, they don't have a third scorer. They have Giannis, and then maybe Ryan Rollins can be your two scorer. Maybe Kevin Porter Jr., your three sometimes. Maybe Gary Trent, your three. But they don't have a definite scorer that can give you 15 to 20 points per night guaranteed. And most of the other Eastern Conference teams have improved. And the Bucks have just gotten more mediocre.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. I'm going to dump a little bit of water on it. I mean, Damian Lillard didn't wear number one, so I don't know what the trade was with Micah Parsons. And I would also suggest not a lot of Eastern Conference teams got better. Look. It's going to be a work in progress to find who is consistently going to be your second leading scorer or third leading scorer to the point of multiple guys that can consistently give you 20 points a night. I mean, I said it at the time of the Miles Turner move. Like, in many ways, the model is probably the Indiana Pacers because Tyrese Halliburton is one of the best players and point guards in the league. I don't know that I'd say Tyrese Halliburton's a guaranteed 20 points a night. He is capable of scoring more than that on any given night. But you know, Pascal Siakam was their leading scorer. Miles Turner wasn't a 20-point scorer. They had a lot of guys that were going to score around like 18 points a game. And I think ultimately that's where this Bucks team is going to sit at. The biggest difference is, oh, by the way, they have the best player in the conference to go along with that as well. The Bulls come to Milwaukee Friday night for the NBA Cup. We will preview that matchup and wrap things up next on Bucks Talk. All right, a tough one tonight, to say the least. 128-100. Raptors have their way with the Bucks. Toronto gets to 500 at 4-4. The Bucks drop to 5-3. I said we're not going to look at the standings because this is the start of the third week in the regular season. But I just can't help myself. So Chicago Bulls are going to come into Milwaukee on Friday night sporting the best record in the Eastern Conference. You have the Bulls at 6-1. Then you have the Sixers and Pistons at 5-2. Sixers play tomorrow against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I believe the Pistons play tomorrow as well. And you got the Bucks at 5-3. Again, I'll take this over the doom and gloom we thought we were headed into at the start of the offseason and a 2-8 start a season ago. But Friday's going to be another challenge. A lot of the things that we said the Raptors do, maybe not so much on the defensive side. Not maybe. Definitely not so much on the defensive side. But the offensive profile, those apply to the Bulls, who came back from 24 down 24 tonight to the Philadelphia 76ers. The Bulls come back and win it on a last-second three-pointer by Nikola Vucevic. So, like, they are clicking on all cylinders. And it really starts with Josh Giddey, who had another terrific game tonight. A triple-double, 29 points, 15 rebounds, and 12 assists. Josh Giddey has slightly improved his three-point shooting. That's ultimately going to be the issue with him and the spacing on the floor. But that's been better this season. He's a very good driver. So everything we talked about of you got to win your battles at the point of attack. When you lose those, everything starts to break down. Guys have to sag into the paint. Guys have to help off of their man. That leads to open looks. We start to see a little more of that tonight, last night, and against the Sacramento Kings. So it's imperative you clean those things up because Josh Giddey is a guy that can get into the paint and break down your defense and spray it out to shooters now. That's how the Bulls have built this team. 2 years ago, the Bulls were allergic to threes. Billy Donovan last year made a concerted effort to lean into let's push the pace and let's take more threes, and they have done the same thing this season. Kevin Huerter is another one of those guys that can knock down shots. So defensively, this is going to be a challenge for you. Offensively, we've seen Giannis feast on these types of guys. Another one is Miles Turner. When you look at, he's had some big games through the years against the Bulls and the Pistons with the Indiana Pacers because of the way their defense plays, that Miles not only can stretch the floor with his three-point shooting, he loves to take those top-of-the-key long twos as well, right around the free throw line. We saw it quite a bit in the playoffs last two seasons. He's made a history doing that to the Bulls. So I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for the offense to eat what defense shows up. That is going to determine who wins that game in the NBA Cup on Friday night at Milwaukee at Fiserv Forum. 7 o'clock tip Friday, 6:30 is when the pregame coverage begins for the NBA Cup. We get the court back. This time the floor isn't blue, so everybody should be happy about that. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then.